Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, the Ohio Black Expo Riverfront Culture Fest and Convention returns to celebrate Black Excellence Memorial Day weekend. We'll hear from the Expo's CEO about some highlights of this year's event. And the Columbus Association for the Performing Arts, better known as CAPA, is getting ready to award the best of the best in high school theater in Central Ohio. CAPA's Director of Education and Engagement will share more about the marquee awards. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective, the nonprofit Ohio Black Expo organization provides year-round programming and activities. However, by far one of their biggest events is happening Memorial Day weekend in downtown Columbus, the Ohio Black Expo Riverfront Culture Fest and Convention. Today we're joined by CEO Sherry Hamilton. Sherry, a lot of exciting stuff is about to happen in downtown Columbus, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're really excited about what's about to transpire. We're actually just back for the third year since the pandemic. Before that, we had about a 30-year hiatus for the event for our organization. So we're excited about the growth that we're able to continue with in this third year back.
Now, I know in previous years, maybe before the hiatus, the event was held in different parts of the state. What brought it back to Columbus?
Well, when our founder, Rhonda D. Robinson, decided that there was still a really great need for this event, she had moved it around, and that caused some challenges, really, because you're going from city to city and kind of having to rebuild everything. And so that was one of the things that we did in our analysis when we were working on the plans for bringing it back. We said, you know what, it needs to be in the center of the state, so that it's easily accessible no matter where you live. And also just wanting to make sure that it has a permanent home and something that we can just continue to build on without having to recreate new situations and new scenarios in every city.
And that's exactly what you're doing. Tell me a little bit about what is going to be happening during the Memorial Day weekend. And we're talking May 23rd through the 26th, kicking things off on Thursday this year, right?
Absolutely. We're kicking things off on Thursday with our youth. We have a what we call the Level Up Youth Summit. And our goal with that really is to inspire and empower them going into their summer, right? And so we want to make sure that they feel positive about their lives and the direction that it's going, and that they are ready for summer with a positive outlook, and just have a fun time at the end of the school year to celebrate.
And for those and some of the other event activities, you've expanded your relationship not only with COSI, but with the Junto Hotel, right?
The Junto is an amazing space. They really do encourage even people who are local to Columbus to come and spend time there. It kind of becomes almost a co-working space during the day. But it's a beautiful little hotel, and we're happy to have them as our host hotel this year, moving on that side of the river. It's what kind of one of the complaints we heard from folks is that they kept having to Uber back and forth from the Hilton or the Hyatt over to the park. So we're really excited about that. We actually have on Friday the State of Black Ohio there at the Junto, as well as a Health and Vitality Expo in the afternoon. So that's going to be fun and really relaxing, very zen, with a sound bath and a yoga session. And then we have some networking going on in the evening. So the State of Ohio Collective organizes that, the State of Black Ohio, and it's really just a way for us to talk about some of the issues that we see across the state and how we can address them in areas like health and education, housing and economic development and other topics like that.
Sherry Hamilton is the CEO of the Ohio Black Expo Riverfront Culture Fest and Convention, returning to downtown Columbus May 23rd for the Memorial Day weekend through the 26th. And on Saturday, I understand there's going to be a whole lot of celebration kicked off by a parade. Right, Sherry?
Absolutely. Yes. So our weekend event is really just a wonderful cultural celebration. But the inspiration for it originally by our founder was to support Black-owned businesses that may not have big marketing budgets and ways to get their messaging out. And even though we have social media now, anyone who tries to use social media to promote their event or their organization, there it's quite challenging unless you throw a lot of money at ads. So we find ourselves right back in that space where Black business owners really do need that support to get the word out. 96% of Black-owned businesses across this nation are solopreneurs, meaning that they don't have the capacity, the growth, to and the financial support to be able to add employees. And that's something that we're endeavoring to do by just helping Black business owners to get the word out and scale their businesses. So that's the goal there. But it's a cultural celebration. It's really an amazing, fun time. We have activities for every age, starting with that parade, which will have 400 to 500 youth and community groups.
A big part of this event is live entertainment. Sherry, tell me if you would about some of the live performers that you have lined up for the weekend.
Absolutely. So we do have a mix of local and national entertainment. The evenings are kind of reserved for those national recording artists that are coming in. But we have local entertainment throughout the day. In different areas, we have everything from African drums to R&B and jazz. And then there in the evenings, we have Brand Nubian, Brother Jay. Those are hip hop artists. We're still celebrating that 50 years of hip hop that came around last year. It's technically still a celebration until August of this year.
As you
But
should.
they're coming in from New York, and they're 90s hip hop artists. And then also we have AJ McQueen, who's actually a spoken word artist. And for any of the Tiny Desk fans out there, he kind of brings that Tiny Desk vibe to the event. And the headliner on Saturday night is A. Marie. And for anyone who's a 90s R&B fan, you know who A. Marie is. And there's also kind of a trend that was started on social media some years ago. They call summer A. Marie season. So basically, when summer starts, they say, oh, it's A. Marie season. The sun is shining. And so that's on Saturday. And on Sunday, our national headliners are Dwele. He's an R&B artist as well. And then five-time Grammy Award winner Esperanza Spalding, who is really an amazing artist. She was the first jazz artist ever to win Best New Artist. So she beat out people that year like Justin Bieber and Drake, you know. So she's really an amazing jazz artist, and we couldn't be more excited to have her here.
What an impressive lineup. It's the Ohio Black Expo, a Riverfront Culture Fest and convention happening Memorial Day weekend in downtown Columbus. And Sherry Hamilton, CEO of the event, is there anything that we haven't gotten to yet?
Yes, absolutely. I do want to add that we have different zones in the footprint of the event, and one of them is an HBCU D9 college alumni zone. So basically, in that zone, it kind of reminds you of a homecoming vibe. So we're excited about that. But early in the day, following the parade, we have a college fair. And so we'll have several colleges represented there for the youth once they finish up with the parade. The other zone is our Root Family Zone. And so in that zone, we have face painting and bounce houses and fun games, backyard games, and activities for all ages. And we really just want to create that opportunity for families to get out there and play, which they may not be taking the time to do because everyone has such busy schedules. So it's a good time for families to come out and engage together and have fun outside like we used to. And then the other zone is an Afrobeats and Amapiano zone. So that's everybody's homework to look up what those two things are. But it's basically a fusion of African beats and American genres like R&B and jazz and hip hop. It's kind of the fusion of all of that, even house music. So really tapping into a lot of the different genres that exist and throughout Black culture. And the last thing I wanted to highlight is a group called Pharoah. Pharoah is a group with two singers. They are actually sisters, biological sisters, but they're of Somali descent. And so they fled Mogadishu when there was a conflict there and moved to Toronto, Canada. And they are the first Somali female artists ever to be signed to a major label. So we're really excited to have them here in Ohio. They actually have some Columbus ties. We didn't know that until after we signed them, but they're excited to come and perform here. They've been here before, but they've never had the opportunity to perform here. So we're happy to make that connection also to the Somali community here, which, as you probably know, is the third largest in the world. So right behind the number of Somali people that live in Somalia is Minneapolis, and right behind Minneapolis is Columbus for the number of Somalis that live here. So we're happy about making that connection as well.
A lot of connections to be made and a lot of culture to be celebrated and uplifted at the Ohio Black Expo Riverfront Culture Fest and Convention happening May 23rd through the 26th, downtown Columbus. During the expo, the organization will be honoring the Columbus Afrocentric Early College Girls Basketball Team, who won the Division III state championship. They'll also be honoring national champion Sakima Walker. It's all online at OhioBlackExpo.com. Ticket information, schedules, all of the information that you need. Sherry Hamilton, CEO of the event, thank you so much for joining us today on Columbus Perspective.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. It's called Central Ohio's Tony Awards. I'm talking about the Marquee Awards. CAPA, Columbus Association for the Performing Arts, is putting on this event for the sixth year, coming up on Thursday, June 6th at 7:30 at the Ohio Theater. Today, we're joined by Amy Handra, Director of Education and Engagement for CAPA. Hi, Amy. Thanks so much for being here on Columbus Perspective.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So tell me about the Marquee Awards. Who are we awarding and for what are we awarding them?
So the CAPA Marquee Awards are a regional awards program connected to a national program called the Jimmy Awards, or the National High School Musical Theater Awards. And those awards, the national program, is sponsored by the Broadway League and produced out of New York. So what they do is any regional market across the country that produces touring Broadway has the opportunity to produce their own regional program. And we are currently in our sixth year of our regional program, the CAPA Marquee Awards. And so what we do is throughout the school year, we send a team of adjudicators out to our participating high schools to evaluate their productions in a number of categories. We actually award 13 different areas, 13 different categories. And also, in addition to that, we have year-long educational activities that we provide to all of the students in the schools that participate for free. So they can come to do a Broadway masterclass when we have Broadway tours in town. We just had a great class, a dance class with Tina, the Tina Turner musical. We also produce Saturday workshops with local and regional artists. And they get the opportunity as well to purchase tickets to some of our shows at discounted rates. And then at the end of the year, we produce a big celebratory showcase where we, it's very similar to the Tonys, where we have a series of different performances highlighting some of our nominees for the year. And then we also give out our awards.
And not only are you giving out statuettes and, of course, the kudos that come with those for these student performers, there's also a chance to win a trip to perform on a Broadway stage in New York.
Yes, absolutely. So After each regional program wraps its program for the year, we send our two best performer in a leading role winners to New York. They have a 10-day New York experience where they're working with Broadway professionals, doing master classes, rehearsals, workshops, coaching, and all of that leads up to the Jimmy Awards, which this year are on June 24th. And at the Jimmy Awards, they get to perform on the Minskoff Theater stage, where the Lion King performs on Broadway. And they get the opportunity to compete with all of the other regional nominees from across the country and potentially win scholarships and the title of national best performer for the Jimmys.
Full disclosure, I am a recovering theater kid. Not recovering. I
A
wear the
lot of us
badge
are.
proudly. High school theater was a big part of my youth. And I love in the news release that I received about this event that you make this wonderful comparison, because I think this is so important for young people who maybe aren't as athletically focused. You say comparable to regional or state championship games in sports, with schools cheering on their teams and players and creating a spirit of camaraderie among all participating schools. It really is no different. It's just sometimes a little less sweaty, right?
100%. Although, if you see some of these numbers that we do at the showcase, they can get pretty sweaty with the dance. But yes, you're absolutely right. I like to make that comparison because, unlike you and I, not everybody grows up a theater kid. So they might not understand what the showcase environment is. And it is just such a wonderful, high energy. The audience is electric. It's a great opportunity, I think, as you stated, and I'll state again, not only for them to celebrate our year of theater as a collective community, but also to cheer on their nominees and the people that are performing and our backstage crew. We also have a student backstage crew that works alongside of our professional stagehands at the Ohio, which is really exciting too. We love our tech kids and try to do lots of things for them as well. And then also, though, it creates a larger sort of feeling of community, which is really important, I think, to me. An important part of the program is that I think our young people who participate get a sense of belonging outside of maybe just their school environment, but a larger community that they meet other people that love what they love. And that's just a really powerful part of the program.
And again, similar to sports, for those that achieve at a really high level, that chance to go on to the bigger playing field or stage, that being Broadway in this case, and a chance for scholarships and national titles. I think that's wonderful for these young people that are arts focused. And I know that Kappa does more than just once a year, kind of. You sort of have touched a little bit on it, but I want to hear more from you about what Kappa does throughout the year to foster educational opportunities for children in the performing arts, children and young people.
We actually, it's thank you for asking. The Marquee Awards are definitely one of our signature programs, and we're really proud of it, and we continue to expand it and grow it as each year goes by. But it's a part of what a larger picture of what we do, and we actually have programming that reaches people of all ages. So some of our kind of flagship programs, if you will, we do the Passport to Learning student matinee series, where we get students into our amazing facilities and buildings to see live shows. And so that's getting those kids to have sometimes their very first theater experience. We also have a program that's an arts and wellness program that happens in the summers, and it is called Arise, Arts Through Intergenerational Social Engagement. And what we do in that program is we pair teens up with older adults, some of whom are living in residential facilities, for a 5-week storytelling program. Storytelling through various art forms. And that's a really wonderful program that we have in the summers. We love our Broadway, so we also do a Broadway in the classroom program, which goes into a couple of Title I schools each year. It takes a Broadway show and it creates with the teachers, we create a 6-week unit surrounding that show, and the young people who participate are learning curriculum connecting to that show. Then we bring them to see the show and meet some cast members and have a talk back afterwards. So it's a really great opportunity to kind of give the power of Broadway experience to our next generation of young people. And then we also do like community programs. So we do Dia de los Niños every year, where we get to celebrate different cultural and arts activities with Dia de los Niños community, where we also present a show, usually a bilingual show in Spanish and English. That's an annual event that we produce. And most recently, we also a partner with Thurber House and a poet educator, Peter Kahn, for a Schooled on Poetry program. So we do a lot throughout the year, and we keep ourselves very busy.
Amy Handra is the Director of Education and Engagement for CAPA. They are responsible for a lot of wonderful performing arts events in our community. And coming up on June 6th, they have the Marquee Awards happening, where they will be awarding the best of the best in high school theater productions and performances from Central Ohio for the past year. Amy, I forgot to ask earlier, are tickets available to the general public for the Marquee Awards?
Oh, 100%. We would love to have anyone who wants to join us. They're available on cbusarts.com. And you can walk the red carpet and get your picture taken and come and enjoy a really fun, high energy night filled with some of your favorite Broadway shows.
That's happening Thursday, June 6th at 7:30 at the Ohio Theater. Of course, it should be at the Ohio Theater.
Of course.
If you'd like more information about the awards or anything else we talked about today, go to kappa.com.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV.
We start with the latest on efforts to get President Biden on the November ballot here in Ohio. The legislature missed a deadline to pass an exception to allow that to happen. So now it really comes down to three options. The first is the Democratic Party could move up its national convention ahead of Ohio's August 7th deadline to certify the ballot. But that's unlikely, leaving option two. The Ohio House and Senate could pass a bill with an emergency clause to create the exception. It would have the bill go into effect immediately instead of waiting the usual 90 days. However, that emergency clause requires more support from Republicans to get a two-thirds vote in both chambers. Or there's option three. The Democrats can go to court. But University of Cincinnati political science professor David Niven says the party might not find success in the courtroom.
You know, part of the problem they have is this is a rule that applies to everybody. So you can't go in there and say there's some, you know, special discrimination going on, you know, impeding you. This was a rule that applied to everybody. You just didn't meet it. So there's a chance they could win in court, but there's also a very meaningful chance they don't win in court. So the bottom line is the party will have to act.
The state has made exceptions twice before, most recently in 2020 when both parties held their conventions after the August deadline. Also at the State House, new legislation to curb violent crime. The bill has one mission, to keep bad guys with guns off the streets. It has a straightforward title, the Repeat Offender Act. Lawmakers say it's not about going after guns, but rather going after those who use guns to commit crimes over and over again. Republican Representatives Bernie Willis and Josh Williams introduced the bill. It would increase penalties for someone caught a second or third time for having a gun illegally. It would also increase penalties for using a gun in a violent crime and require mandatory sentences for certain offenses. The co-sponsors say a small number of people are committing a disproportionate amount of the violent crime.
These repeat offenders, people that have been told by judges at sentencing, you shall never own a gun or ammunition again in your life unless your rights are restored. And some of them get out within 6 months, they're caught. doing another crime.
Attorney General Dave Yost was at the news conference to throw his support behind the measure. House Minority Leader Allison Russo said she thinks it covers one piece of a very large problem that will take a multifaceted approach to solve. Representative Williams says the Ohio Prosecuting Attorneys Association is against a small portion of the law that deals with automatically sealing records on some nonviolent offenses after a certain amount of time passes. The bill is in its very early stages. The sponsors are now waiting for it to be assigned to a House committee. Ohio lawmakers also introduced a new bill that would allow law enforcement to pull you over for not wearing a seatbelt. State Representative John Cross introduced the bill. It specifically changes the offense of not wearing a seatbelt from a secondary to a primary offense. This means police can pull you over if they see you not wearing one. Ohio Department of Public Safety Director Andy Wilson says this bill will save lives.
The cost of not doing something so simple is so astronomical. It just makes sense to do it. And if we can incentivize people, we can motivate people to put that seatbelt on through a primary seatbelt law, then we need to seriously look at doing it.
The bill would also make it a primary offense for anyone who fails to properly secure a child in a seatbelt or child safety seat. According to AAA, in nearly 50,000 crashes reported to the Ohio State Highway Patrol last year, people were not belted in. The legislation still needs to be assigned a bill number. Ohio State University President Ted Carter has been in his new job for only 4 months now. He said this week he believes the university handled recent protests on campus appropriately. He spoke with reporters for the first time since 36 arrests were made during a pro-Palestine demonstration. Carter says he cares passionately about freedom of speech, but also feels a responsibility for safety on campus. Officers arrested 36 protesters, including 16 OSU students, during a large protest on the night of April 25th. Carter said he's proud of what the security force did to remove the tents. Carter says protesters had been warned for 5 hours that they would not be allowed to set up an encampment.
They made it very clear to us that they planned to encamp, and we told them that wasn't going to be allowed. We didn't want to arrest anybody. We didn't want to go through any of that. But when it became apparent that they were going to go to whatever level they wanted to stay there, we had to use extra security forces, which our campus police is not large enough to do. That's why we asked for some support from the State Highway Patrol, including a medical
car. Carter says he gets why some people are upset about what happened, but he said the university has to enforce its rules. He also pointed out that two more large protests were held on campus after April 25th and no arrests were made. And as he put it, the First Amendment was on full display. President Carter also expressed his sympathies to the family of the woman who died after falling from Ohio Stadium during last Sunday's commencement. The Franklin County Coroner's Office identified the woman as 53-year-old Larissa Brady. An Ohio State spokesperson said the woman was a family member of one of the graduates. Ohio State said police do not suspect foul play or an accidental fall. Carter says he learned of the tragedy as they were going on stage for commencement.
So you can imagine how difficult that was for us thinking about those families. And quite frankly, we didn't have all the information. And out of respect for that family, who I knew either was somehow connected to graduation, I thought it very inappropriate to say anything about it until we either we had more facts.
A spokesperson said the university made counseling and other support resources available. The school also said those experiencing suicidal thoughts or who are in crisis should contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline by dialing 988. Finally, Carter also spoke for the first time about the unconventional commencement address that's been widely talked about online. OSU alum Chris Pan delivered the speech. Carter called the address very non-traditional and said he'd never met Chris Pan before commencement weekend. Pan is a social entrepreneur and is the founder of My Intent. He got booed when he promoted the cryptocurrency Bitcoin as an investment during his speech. He also led students on a sing-along and had President Carter help him with a magic trick. Pan wrote on his social media that he got some help from psychedelic drugs to write the commencement speech. Carter said the selection process for the speaker was underway before he became president.
I did not review his speech. I did not know what he was really going to speak about. And again, wouldn't matter because once he gets to the microphone, he's got the microphone. That was certainly an interesting speech. I would say very non-traditional. There were some that liked it and a lot that didn't.
Carter also said Chris Pan had been on the list of recommended speakers for commencement since 2019. Carter was at the State House to testify in front of the Senate Workforce and Higher Education Committee. He highlighted some of OSU's accomplishments and programs and the university's impact on the state. Carter said OSU has a nearly $20 billion impact for the state, generates more than $660 million in tax revenue for state and local governments, and supports 117,000 jobs. He also requested $76.5 million in state funding for renovation and improvement projects on buildings on the main and regional campuses. That money would be used for things such as roofs, HVAC systems, elevators, and fire systems, to name a few.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
Ohio has a rich and long history. Part of that is the seven men born in Ohio who went on to become president of the United States, from Ulysses Grant in 1869 to when Warren Harding died in office in 1923. A brand new book chronicles their lives, careers, and the places you can go in Ohio to experience some of their history. Ohio's Presidents, A History and Guide by author Heather Cole is available now. It just came out on May 6th. Cole is a writer and public historian living in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. She spent a lot of time researching the book and crisscrossing Ohio to learn about, chronicle, and now share the lives of Grant, Rutherford B. Hayes, James Garfield, Benjamin Harrison, William McKinley, William Howard Taft, and Warren G. Harding. Author Heather Cole is my guest. Well, first of all, I guess just why did you write this book? How did this come about?
So this is actually the second book that I've written about U.S. presidents. Back in 2022, I wrote a book about the 8 U.S. presidents who were born in Virginia. And that book had come about because I was working as a tour guide at one of the presidential sites. Got the idea to do a book that would be something that isn't a deep dive into presidential politics, but is something instead that, you know, you might pick up off the shelf and take a look through as a casual reader. So I did a book on the Virginia presidents that came out in 2023, and then it sort of was logical to then tackle the state that had the second greatest number of U.S. presidents, which was Ohio. So that's how I came to do the book on the 7 Ohio presidents.
So how did you do the research for this?
So I read a lot. That was my first step. And then I spent a chunk of time in sort of 2 specific trips going and visiting as many of the presidential sites in Ohio that I could, which was honestly was the best part of the project, was getting to meet all of the museum docents and tour guides who have devoted their careers to studying the presidents and sharing their stories with the public.
Now, you just said this isn't a deep, like, scholarly investigation of their lives. So, what was your goal in writing it?
We all probably learned about these guys in history class when we were in high school, but most of us have not retained that information, in part because often history gets taught as names and dates in formal education. And what I wanted is to create a book that would be something that number one, is readable for the casual reader, someone who doesn't know anything, you know, about presidential history, but might pick this up because they have stumbled upon a historic site and want to learn a little bit more about one of these presidents, or are visiting family or friends in one of these communities and decide, hey, why don't we spend some time with our family going and visiting one of these sites? So it can be something that you pick up, you know, you read a chapter about one of the presidents, you say, hey, we can go visit these sites, you go do that, put it down, and, you know, maybe perhaps don't pick it up again until next time you're planning some sort of a history road trip. So the idea was that it be readable for the casual reader, sort of, you know, high school age and up, that you don't have to have any specific knowledge to read it. And hopefully it's not sort of a boring academic text.
Well, it's not. I've read quite a bit of it myself. And it is, you know, you got the key points in there, you know, the history, the career, post-presidential life, if they made it past their presidencies. And then, you know, the places to go and see. Was there a favorite for you of the presidential sites here in Ohio?
Oh, that's tough. So there's a couple that were sort of my favorites. Among them was the McKinley Presidential Library and Museum in Canton. love that place, particularly if you have kids, because they don't just tell McKinley's story. They tell McKinley's story within sort of the larger context of Stark County history. And so in addition to having an exhibit about McKinley, they also have, you know, they have a natural history museum there. They have sort of a walkthrough of an old-timey town. They have a lot of local history there, and it's super interactive and really designed for families. So I love that one in terms of a place to take kids and family. If you really like guided tours of presidential houses, my favorite was actually the Harding Presidential Library and House, which is the newest of the Ohio presidential sites. The two tour guides that I went on tours with there were so knowledgeable and so engaging and so open to sort of folks asking additional questions. I super duper recommend those guided tours there.
Now, Rutherford B. Hayes may not be one of the best known presidents, but he does have a couple fun firsts during his presidency. What were those?
He does. So if any of you have made the trip down to Washington, D.C. with kids and perhaps participated in the Easter egg roll on the White House lawn, Rutherford B. Hayes was actually the president that first started that back in 1878. He was also the first president to have a telephone in the White House, which was fairly early for the time period. And interestingly, he had a telephone several years before the White House was fully electrified. But those are his sort of claims to first.
That's cool. Well, now, all seven Ohio-born presidents served over a 54-year period from 1869 to 1923. How significant was this time frame in American history and development?
Oh, it was hugely significant. And I think it's fascinating. And that's one of the things that's so interesting about the Ohio presidents is that they all are elected and serve during this, you know, five decade time period. So if you think about that historically, we start with Ulysses S. Grant, who becomes president shortly after the end of the Civil War, which is a time period when the country is still really divided and really torn. And, you know, part of his role is to figure out how to rebuild us from, you know, from after the Civil War into one united nation again. And then we go from that, sort of this division after the Civil War, we go through sort of the Gilded Age, where we see the rise of industrialism, of the robber barons. We see, you know, huge immigration to the country and industrialization and great changes sort of in the fabric of what America is, changing from a largely rural nation to a largely urban nation and all of the good and bad things that happened during that time period. And then we see that up through the First World War and into, you know, when Warren G. Harding finally dies in office in 1923, you know, it's a very different nation than it was 50 years before. You know, we've been through a world war, and we are looking at what it means to be a multicultural global power on the world stage in a way that our country had never been before. And I think it's kind of exciting that sort of Ohio presidents help shepherd the nation through this change from, you know, from a very divided nation after the Civil War to the beginnings of what will become sort of the modern nation that we are today.
Now, a sad part of the history, though, is that two of them, Garfield and McKinley, were assassinated and Harding died in office. So kind of, you know, not all of them made it through their terms.
No, they didn't. But both of those are also, you know, indicative, at least the two gentlemen who were assassinated in office, their assassinations were also kind of indicative of the time period. So we've got James Garfield, is elected and becomes president in 1881. So that is a moment when what the presidency is changing. So the gentleman who ends up assassinating Garfield is actually somebody who very much wanted a role in Garfield's administration. And for decades and decades and decades, you got a role in a presidential administration through contacts. You know, so this is the time period, you know, when Tammany Hall and sort of political contacts are how people get into power. And this particular man believed that he deserved a seat in Garfield's administration. When he was rebuffed by that, you know, decided that, you know, that Garfield shouldn't be president, and mm-hmm. tracked him down and ends up assassinating him in a train station in D.C. You know, there was probably some mental illness happening there as well, but it also was sort of this expectation that one would be able to receive political favors in return for having done a political favor.
Heather, thank you so much. The book is Ohio's Presidents, A History and Guide. It is fascinating stuff. As you said, it's a casual read to learn a little bit about these fascinating men and the places that people can go to see them.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan, heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.